Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
Do you know what month this is, Gerard?
Black History Month?
Of the 12 months that we have, yeah. That is not the only thing that's in the month of February. You know what else is happening this month?
You're going on vacation.
That's one thing. All-Star break.
All-Star break.
I don't care what the All-Star game.
Right, right.
It's the break that we're celebrating
here. Correct.
Valentine's Day, a holiday that
your birthday
and my birthday, my last year in the 50s, buddy. This is it. I know I don't sound as old as I look, I'm sure. I'm fucking,
you know,
you don't know this. You don't know, you didn't know me at 49.
No,
but at 49 and a half, my wife and I initially thought we would go to Napa, which we're going this summer. It looks like we've never done it before.
I'll send you some vineyards to go to. That I like.
Yeah, well, my college roommate is like in the business, so that'll help too, but I'll take anything you got. And then I just said, I don't want to fucking, the week I have off, and back then it wasn't a week, remember?
Yeah.
It was like 4 days, right?
Yeah.
I just want to just, let's just do a party and let people make fun of me. So we did a big roast and toast here at the house. We had like 75 people over, freezing cold. And I just got roasted. But, it was, you know, turning 50, so all year long I was saying, like on Facebook posts, whatever, fuck 50. So my wife made up balloons of an old white dude shooting the bird saying fuck 50 all over the house, everywhere. It was great. Napkins. Yeah, we had it catered in. It was a whole thing. So we're not doing that this time. We'll be away. But fuck 60. That's my new thing this year, right? Once I turn 59, fuck 60.
Well, you know, you have referenced your age a lot recently. I mean, you do all the time, but you
hang it on, baby.
I mean, how are you really feeling about it? Look, David, to me, 60 is the new, like, 40. Like, you can probably live till you're 90-something years old anyway. I mean, you got many years to go.
Yeah, my mom is going to be 82, right. And she's doing really well. And her mom lived to her 90s. It's funny you asked that question. You didn't know I was going to bring this up. I've dreamed a lot recently of my dad, who's no longer with us, obviously. And for the first time in my life, I have thought about, like, what it's going to be like. I thought about... What if I lost my wife? Like, what in the fuck would I do? That was a dark place. And then more recently, including yesterday, I woke up from a dream thinking, man, I just want to enjoy life as much as I can. Because I've never had these thoughts before, ever. And I'm healthy. I just went to the heart doctor recently. Mm-hmm. I've seen the brain doctor. Like, I'm doing good.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, I've never had these thoughts before. And I just have so much to do still. I told my wife, no more looking forward to anything. It'll come when it comes. Mm-hmm. Let's just really focus on today. Not that we don't plan, we do.
Right.
But I don't want to get excited about anything except for today. Let's enjoy today. So on my little calendar that's next to me, when I handwrite it, I got the True Hoop pod, exclamation points. I'm ready to go. Lot to talk about today.
Oh, we do have a lot to talk about. I like it. We're going to kick it off with Ask Coach Thorpe. For those of you that want to delve into the mind of Coach Thorpe and all his basketball musings, send us an email at truehoop@truehoop.com. That is TRUEHOOP@truehoop.com. And I'm glad that we have a question to start with today, because I did want to actually ask you something not quite related to this, but a question. Uh-huh. And normally I would just text you offline, but then I said, you know, it's kind of rude to hog all of Coach Thorpe's insight just for myself. I should share with other people. So I decided to ask my question and share it with others. But we'll first start with Daryl Wills, who said, in our last episode, we talked about no one being able to guard Luka or players like him. And he's wondering why a player's skill set, size, IQ, and all the metrics that make them a superstar offensive player don't transfer over to the defensive side of the floor. What makes those players not able to do it on both sides? Reluctance, boredom, drive, intensity? And are there any players that are close to being as good offensively as they are defensively?
Okay, so I make sure I get everything here. First of all, I didn't mean to say nobody can guard those guys.
It's just very hard. Right.
To be more nuanced and accurate, the whole goal, it's blackjack. We're trying, as a defense, we're trying to deal 16s if you play blackjack. The problem with, like, Kevin Durant, I told you, everything's an 11 to Kevin Durant. You can double down on all of it. Luka's pretty close, but he's not 7 feet tall. And he's not quite as quick with the ball as oftentimes as Kevin Durant still can be. So we're trying, so the idea with guys like Luka, you're trying to make them take the tougher shots, and then you just have to live with the result because they're amazing. This is how you play with everybody, by the way. But lesser players tend to make those tough shots less, right? And they're unable to counter what you're forcing them. The best players don't just take what you give them. That's a myth. Why would they ever do that? That's terrible offense. They're going to get what they want. And then they may have to settle when you take it away for what's next. But they initially want to get what they want. They're not just going to take what you give them all the time. So, So what makes Luka, let's use him as a great example, so much better offensively and defensively. And I think the whoever sent the question mentioned some good things. But it starts with this. Offensively, you have the ball. So the ball is a magic wand. It can make you do different things. I can make you think I'm going right, but I'm going left and vice versa. I can make you think I'm shooting, but I'm really faking to make you foul me. Or I'm faking and then driving by you. Or I'm attacking forwards. You have to respect the fact that I may go get a layup or a dunk, and then I'm pulling it back to shoot the three. The ball allows me to be quicker than what I really am. Defensively, I don't have any of that ability. I strictly have to either guide you somewhere, meaning I'm taking away your right hand, I'm making you use the screen, I'm making you reject the screen, and I'm making you change direction. Mm-hmm. It's a big thing that we talk about. If you're guarding Jaren Jackson Jr., don't let him finish left hand around the rim. So I can do some of those things, but I can't dictate any more than that because I don't have the ball in my hands. It's just a different thing. And so that makes it much harder. The Larry Bird was famous for being much better off the ball defensively than on the ball, especially on the perimeter. That's why. He just wasn't a great athlete. Athleticism really matters. There's lots of things you can do when you're not a great athlete. When the Utah Jazz were doing well a couple of years ago, George Niang was rating along with Rudy Gobert as their best defensive player, which seemed impossible to imagine. He was called the minivan for a reason. I think he maybe almost called himself that. But George was very aggressive on the ball. He didn't let you get comfortable. You didn't just seek him out to take advantage of him because he made you uncomfortable. That's a trick that I teach, for example, for players who are going to be targets. Right, J.J. Redick learned when he was targeted more to just fight, be feistier, be tougher. And a lot of players, it's just like the law of the jungle in a sense, they don't want to pick on the super aggressive Buffalo. They want to pick on the kid, right, or the sick one, right? Tell what the NBA is, they're going to pick out the sick one, right? So I think the question is really good about, I think he or she asked about who is close to being really good at both. Mm-hmm. So let's think of some. Giannis, Shea,
Kawhi.
He was the third name I was thinking about is Kawhi.
Joel Embiid can be pretty good defensively.
Embiid ranks right now, I think, right there among the top ones. Mm-hmm. PG, LeBron,
peak LeBron. Like
those guys, LeBron, even at his age, I don't know what his metrics are this year, but historically, LeBron has been one of those guys. So these are, what are they? Long, strong, athletic, tough, right? And also magical with the ball. Because if you aren't magical with the ball, you're not going to be able to do those things. Mm-hmm. You just can't be quite as good. So great question, but don't ever think for 1 second Luka can't be better. Tyrese Haliburton against the Celtics the other night, all they did initially was feast on Haliburton, probably because he just came back from injury and probably because he's not a good defensive player also. So they can be better. They got to fight harder. Why don't they? Foul trouble, which we're going to talk more about later. Energy expended on defense necessarily, potentially subtracts from what you can do offensively. So those are issues too. I know this, you in my opinion, it's still not understood well enough. The fact that the referees are calling things the way they are this year has really raised a fair question about how important is defense truly. We'll find out this postseason if they call it the same way they're calling it now. But until at least we see that, you have to care. Yeah. You can't just whitewash people offensively and smoke them out with threes and everything and expect just to win automatically because defense matters.
No, 100%.
And 50% of the game.
I mean, yeah. So much of it for defenders and people who are so minus in that end, a name like Halliburton comes to mind. You have to first have the effort on that end and want to do it, right? Like it starts there. And so many players have zero interest or effort on that side of the floor.
Yeah. And just to finish the thought, we've said this, I think, once before on the show. Harden used to get a bad rap. His years were way better, mm-hmm. almost in every case, than our bad defenders now that are great offensive players. Mm-hmm. He and Steph defended much, much better than we're seeing some of the top scorers now doing.
No doubt. This moves me to something I was thinking about, David, as I, you know, obviously watch a ton of basketball, go to a bunch of games locally. I was thinking about the Clippers and James Harden's, for lack of a better term, pick and roll camp. How it first started with Zubac and the big man, and then a bunch of other players started to come too, right? And I'm going to make an assumption that potentially coaches weren't present at that. It was just the players working on it. Coaches could have been, but that's the assumption I'm making. And I make that assumption because watching games, as everybody knows, when a timeout's called, the players are often on the bench with themselves for a while because the coaches are out sort of like at a little bit away from the bench, 10 feet in front of, diagramming where the next play is, talking about whatever they want to address. And I often watch the players themselves talking about either something that just happened on the floor or something that's going to happen or something that they can work on. And I was wondering, from your perspective as a coach, you always talk about how this is a coach's league, and I don't disagree. But how important is it for players to be able to communicate with one another what they see on the floor and, in a sense, problem solve on their own or, in those breaks, diagnose something? And when the coach comes back and says, hey, coach, when X happens, we're seeing Y. What do you think?
I mean, I think that's one of the probably least understood aspects of our game that have real value, has real value. I was talking to a Pacers fan the other day, an insider who's connected to the Pacers. He doesn't work for the Pacers, though. And he was telling me, he asked me if I noticed how often Halliburton and Siakam had been talking, and I had not noticed. This was before Halliburton was back, so this was maybe 4 or 5 days ago. He's only played one game against Boston, and I hadn't seen that. I don't typically watch that kind of stuff when I've got 4 and 5 screens running, which I've had a lot recently. And this guy who's very knowledgeable about basketball said, it's a lot of this, you know, I'm putting my hand over my mouth for you, listen on podcast. They're talking in a way that I don't think they want anyone else to see what they're saying. I doubt they're talking about, hey, do you want to go get steak tonight or seafood? You know, they're trying to figure stuff out. I did notice one time Halliburton was on the bench in street clothes. Someone was shooting free throws. I think it was the other team. And the Pacers were on the free throw line. And Siakam was turning around, nodding his head as Tyrese was telling him something. And then he got on his knees and he turned back around and looked at him again. And I don't think Halliburton was telling him what to do on the play because that would have come from someone on the court. Mm-hmm. It was something else. My guess was it was a big part of the game. It might have been, you know, I could be wrong. It might have been the Boston game when Tyrese was done for the game. It's possible. I don't remember when it was, but I think it was Tyrese saying, like, we need you just to go take over. I'm out, you know? I'm guessing Jokic and Murray have had lots of conversations. PG and Kawhi and now Harden. I think I may have told you a story when Corey Brewer got to Oklahoma City, when Billy Donovan was there, who of course Corey played for Billy. He told me a few weeks in that every road game they play, if they're in town for the night, the starting five go to dinner. And I want to say it was Corey, PG, Russ, Adams, and I've just gone blank on who the fifth one is. I used to know who it was, but I was younger and had a better memory. The starting five. They went to dinner. Of course, my first thought is, what about the bench? I thought that was pretty important. Oh, Carmelo. Mm-hmm. Did I say Carmelo already?
No, you didn't.
He was in the group. Yeah, PG and Carmelo. And that was meaningful to Corey because he had just gotten there. The other guys had been there all season. That kind of stuff, I think it really matters. Our game is jazz. It is fast, free-flowing, fluid, whatever term you want to use. and it's high volume stuff. And so you've got to start predicting things. I was listening to someone talk about Jokic and Murray the other day, just how beautifully they play together like a dance. Mm-hmm. That just doesn't come from reps. It also comes from knowledge, a knowledge base. I don't know if you've ever read Blink.
Mm-hmm. Malcolm Gladwell.
What second book, I want to say. Yep. So we were much younger when we read it. I think in that book, Gladwell wrote about people in the, you know, linguists in that world would videotape conversations and then press mute and press fast forward. And it looked like a dance. We're humans, that's, as a species, I think we're that way, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. We, you and I... Mm-hmm. I'm changing up our top five at the end because I feel like we've done this so long. We're always going to say the same thing. Right. So I'm trying to spice it up. You'll see. Do you keep doing what you're doing? Don't change a thing. So with time that happens, if you're open, mm-hmm. which is super important, mm-hmm. I think our best players tend to be open. But I also think they need to be willing to confront, willing to deal with conflict and resolve it the right way and be better for it. You know? I can't believe Draymond Green was all kumbaya all the time when they were winning championships. Right. I think they found a way to resolve issues they did, and they were better for it. So it's really, you asked me a great question. I think it's super valuable, and it's something even at the high school level, when I was helping, I really pushed it. But I would tell you now, when a high-level player is traded and I am friendly with the player or work with the player or whatever, I'm always advising that player to spend extra time talking to the top players. You talk to everybody, but solve problems with the top players. And the best coaches recognize who their brainiacs are, mm-hmm. and go to them.
Yeah.
Which is why I go back to saying, Doc should have been saying to Harden, let me listen. Mm-hmm. First day, cameras are on. I ain't saying a word, James. Tell me what you see. Let's get the big fella an MVP. How do we do it? That's what should have happened. Mm-hmm. Because the best coaches do that.
No, I love it. I love it. I was in Brooklyn last night for the Suns and KD's return. And I saw a lot of that with Booker, KD, and Beal, just like when a timeout's kind of three of them, either if they were on the court together, walking across, diagramming what just happened, or if two were out, the other one on the bench saying, getting up, being like, no, when so-and-so's cutting from here, you got to lift or you've got to drop, or it's just really amazing stuff. And I'm like, all right, this is how these guys figure this stuff out, right? It's not just, to your point, reps. I like it.
I think about this all the time, actually, and I mean this all the time. I think about the level of the number of games that our veterans, our best players have played, going back to high school AAU and then high school basketball. Many of these guys have been playing for high level teams, winning, trying to win championships, playoff, you know, LeBron James' toughest games his senior year were not against the Oak Hills. Right. Smoked. Someone can look it up and tell me if I'm wrong. My memory is, because I was friendly with one of the coaches, smoked out the other national powers. But the in-conference Catholic League games in Akron, fucking war, right? So when these guys have gone through their districts against teams that have played them 2, 3, 4 times a season, forget about the spring league and the fall league and then the way they know each other through AAU. So they've gone through that. They've gone through their 1, 2, 3 years of college, whatever. And now they're in the NBA and they're 28 years old. Oh my goodness. They played a billion chess matches.
Yeah.
Matches. They're grand masters. Mm-hmm. And so they're, it's not that I say this all the time to my top players. I'm not sure I see anything you don't see. You may not just be mindful of it because there's so much to be mindful of. And I think I can maybe provide some mindfulness to something that you maybe are overlooking because there's 8 million other stimuli in your brain. Mm-hmm. That's really what it is. Mm-hmm. For the rookies, they ain't seen nothing.
Yeah.
nothing. Now, it's amazing to watch them learn, just like as a dad, when you see your kids doing things like, oh my God, I couldn't even think about this 2 weeks ago. And now they're expert. For young, I have rookies every year. And to see they're going from puppy dog to wily pet, in a sense, like, because they can't do much.
Right.
They're limited, right? But they can do what they can do within that space. And they're not puppies anymore. They're not bouncing around. Christian Brown in the NBA Finals was not the same as Christian Brown in November of his first year.
Yep.
So that part is fun. But boy, when you start letting these guys learn and talk, it really makes a difference, I think.
Well, that's a perfect dovetail into your article that came out yesterday, which is basically the end of the Warriors dynasty and what caused it. And if those of you that are not true subscribers, you should be. Read that excellent article by David. You point out the two timelines was really the disaster that caused the end of the dynasty. And it is because of what you just said. When you're a rookie, first of all, playing in the NBA hard enough, but playing in the Warriors offense on top of being a rookie, that's a PhD course. I think you use math. So that's advanced calculus, and these dudes haven't mastered algebra yet. Well, guess what you're going to do in calculus? Flunk, right? Because it's hard if you don't know algebra, and that's what was happening with the Warriors.
I think so. So we did a poor job. It's my fault. It's all my fault. But I did a poor job making sure the final article, because I had Travis Moran is an amazing editor. I'm not nearly as smart as I may seem to be, because Travis really helps a lot. It's just a fact. Henry as well, obviously. Both those guys look at everything I write. And I failed to express what I thought was maybe the best metaphor I could use, which is this. I learned this when I was in college. I took an amazing class called Exceptional Children. And it was basically about disabled citizens. You don't have to be a child. So we studied blindness and deaf and everything, deafness and all of it. And I've written this before, and we've talked on the show. If you take a blind person, bring them into a mansion or a big house, whatever, and you just walk them through every nook and cranny, okay? Then walk away. They're good. They'll know. They know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They will get around as if they've lived there with sight their whole life, mm-hmm. okay? But if you just drop them off, here's the key. Good luck. Mm-hmm. It's very, very hard for them to get a feel. This is what we studied in class. 38 years ago. Well, really, that's what the Warriors did, is they brought these young players in, and basically it's like, figure it out. Here you go. Because it takes years. Like, if you're in a gigantic mansion, you're not going to do that in an afternoon. Right. It's going to take a while to get someone that doesn't see well. It's the same thing. The Cuisinart is so hard to master. And we've seen evidence of that, mm-hmm. obviously. And then I also wrote, as you know, how little these guys had played compared to that core, mm-hmm. right? Clay, 3 years of college. Mm-hmm. Draymond, four. Steph, was it three? I don't remember. Three. Mm-hmm. But between them, 157 college games. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kuminga playing the G League. I'm sorry.
Right.
The Ignite this year, 0-15 in the regular season.
Right.
Like, they'll have eight guys in the All-Star game or whatever it is, but they're 0-15. Like, it's not real basketball that they play anyway. They're not studying the way they are. Moody played one season in Arkansas, which is a significant program, mm-hmm. and I think Musselman's a very good coach. And Weissman played three games and dominated everyone when he was in high school because he's so much bigger. They could not so what I wrote is they should have added veterans. Yeah. The example I used, and there's many I could have used, Malik Beasley, mm-hmm. for the Bucks, mm-hmm. basically top two in the league in 3-point shooting and on a minimum deal.
Yep.
They should have gone that route. And then realize when it's over. And then we'll just start over, kind of thing. And who knows what happens if you get lucky. Maybe you get a guy on a cheap deal that's young.
Right.
And maybe he grows into it. That's always possible, too. But the reality is, I mean, Gerard, tell me, do you think they're going to even make the playoffs?
No. We did our...
I mean, make the playoffs.
We did our draft on Monday of title contenders, and neither one of us took the Golden State Warriors from the Western Conference.
Well, that was for the top... That was top four.
Yeah. But still, it was eight teams were selected between the two of us, and the Warriors weren't among the eight teams selected.
Right. So could they make the top 10 in the West? Sure. They're playing better.
Right. I have,
but it's just a hope that they'll go beyond anything.
I have no confidence they're going to win the play-in and then go on some run during the postseason. Like, you know, I understand why people do it. It's because, you know, we've seen it. We've seen the movie before. We've seen these particular actors do the thing.
Yeah.
The problem is, this isn't like acting where you can just recite your lines and go. You got bad people trying to stop you on the other side.
Exactly right. You're a bad guy. Exactly. Right? You've been around me long enough. The other guys are trying to shoot you in the heart every fucking day.
Exactly. So I just don't. Yeah. I don't see it, you know? Look, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But that's just not what I see happening for these Warriors this year.
Yeah. The odds are very, very low. And you know, someone commented, which I'm fine with them commenting. By the way, the reason why I failed on the blind thing is I didn't go into that detail, and I needed to. I needed to make sure it was in the final one. I would never make fun of blind people, that's for sure. I don't make fun of anyone. It's not my thing. I'm not someone that's jocular that way. But someone said that, you know, I'm wrong to say that Weissman had the talent Embiid did. No, I'm not.
No, you're not.
I feel very, very comfortable. First of all, he went number two above LaMelo. Embiid went number three. Both were coming off injury, okay? I saw Embiid as a senior in high school, really, really talented player. I talked to a lot of people about Weissman when he was 17, 18. And I've talked to five or six NBA players who have played with him and more that have played against him. Well, probably equal number. Blown away with his talent. blown away. You remember Darko? Mm-hmm. I've never talked. Ask anyone that's ever, they're all retired now, pretty much. Ask, maybe Kevin Love is, he, you can ask him. Ask them about Darko. Absolutely otherworldly talent. Just really managed very poorly and just kind of lost it.
Couldn't put
and
together.
I think probably with James. Meanwhile, I've watched Bagley play recently. Mm. He was pretty damn good. Yeah. Not defensively, but no one on that team's garbage. Right. He's a handful. I loved him coming out of Duke. I loved him at Sacramento. It was a bad franchise for a long time. And now he's in Washington. We'll see what happens. But Wiseman was every bit the talent Embiid. I mean, I'm not the same player. I'm not saying he right. could shoot like
talented
Embiid.
Yet.
What I meant is overall impact. He could have an MVP level impact and just was really, it was a bad handle on all sides.
Well, David Bagley, his high school, that high school class of his, that when he was the number one guy. If you go back to that draft,
yeah, right.
He was the guy. They were like, oh, Marvin Bagley. That
he was
the
drafted
guy.
Number two.
He was the
went
guy.
To Duke.
Yes, he was the yeah. guy. And yeah. let's not forget, and you brought this up in the article, I think it was Embiid's first three seasons. You're like, you know how many points Joel Embiid scored in his yeah. first three seasons?
First two first seasons, season. Zero.
Right. And remember the articles that were coming out about him then David? No, he's drinking too many Shirley Temples and like not. Oh.
That's right.
So anyone who back then would have said, oh, I knew he would have been MVP impossible. No, you didn't. You didn't. I mean, maybe you did. But most people did not know that because we didn't know if he was going to have the drive, the work ethic, was going to manage probably the injuries. You had no idea. Like we say all the time, where you get drafted and what yep. happens to you plays such a critical role in what eventually turns out. And yes, you as the player have to have the want to mindset and the, which by the way, that ain't easy. Like you think, oh, they made the NBA. They'll have the same. Not necessarily. Like, and you know, that's maybe the case with James Wiseman and some of these other guys.
I talked to an NBA player last night about a player he knows named Jairus Walker mm-hmm. who plays for the Pacers. Really talented yep. player, I think. Potentially a game changer for them. If he can end up being a three, because he won't be a four over Siakam now, at least the next few years, if they re-sign him, which I suspect they will. But Rick Carlisle played with him at three, and he looked pretty good. Mm-hmm. He's not very tall, but he's super long and athletic, whatever. But this person who knows him well, not friend-wise, but as a player, he wasn't sure how hard he was going to work. He didn't say, I definitely know he's not going to do it. It was a question. As some guys don't have that question. This guy had a question about Jairus. So we'll see, because if he really puts it, I mean, it's just hard.
Yes.
You have to be coachable, but you have to put in time. I love the players. You know the old saying, you want to have the optimism of an 80-year-old man that marries a woman who's 30 years old and buys a big house, buys a mansion next to an elementary school, right? It's kind of a sexist thing, but you understand right. the point For of sure. optimism, right?
Yes.
I like the NBA player who buys a place below his means next to the arena, next to the practice facility. I love that. Because that tells me, oh, this dude just wants to hoop. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, I talked to my son about this. One thing he loved about his Florida State guys is they don't really go out. Like we just want to get better all the time. That isn't always the case. Mm-hmm. In the NBA, it definitely isn't always the case. But the guys that just want to hoop all the time, and I know who they are, because they're calling me at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night mm-hmm. or texting me, mm-hmm. watching the game. Like, and they're 22 years old or 25 years old. Like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. The 25 is not so bad. Unless you're single, maybe a little different. But these guys they're addicted to the game.
Yeah.
And they're addicted to working. And they don't want to fail. That's a good recipe right there, man.
You talked about it before on a previous show. It's embarrassing also, right, to fail, right? You don't want too much of that, right?
That's a great point.
It's just not.
For sure it is. Yeah. Yeah, you can be motivated a lot of different ways. You can be motivated in a selfish way. It does mean you're not working hard. But going back to our original point, it's hard to do that. That's why you see, like, look at OG and Siakam since the trade. Mm-hmm. Like, they're almost like they pulled off their outer shell. Like, oh my God, these guys are playing with joy. Mm-hmm. Tells you something about Toronto. Yeah. By the way, what would Scottie Barnes do if there was suddenly more joy there?
Oh, yeah.
It inspiration matters. Fit matters. The roster matters. Mm-hmm. The strategy matters. In Wiseman's case, it hasn't gone well. Kuminga's coming mm-hmm. around nicely. Mm-hmm. He's looking like a positive player. Can he help carry a team in the playoffs? It's silly to
right.
think that he's 21
now.
Years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably not. But we're all, I mean, who, nobody, the point of the article is nobody wants to root to see Steph lose.
Right.
We'd like to see him compete. He doesn't have to want to be him. He has the privilege of choosing, right, Gerard?
Wherever he wants to go.
If he wants to stay in San Fran,
sure.
and continue to win 32 to 40 games a year. That's it's his prerogative, but we just have to applaud. But if he says, guys, it's time, mm-hmm. then I think they should say, just tell us where you want to go. We're not going to do the Dame thing.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You're Steph Curry.
Right, right.
Big difference. Dame's amazing. He ain't Steph.
Right.
Where do you want to go, Steph? Give us 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Now it's too late this year. Yeah. Now you get 2 weeks.
Right.
No, I'm sorry. You get 1 week.
Yeah, yeah.
Week from today, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Week from today.
Trade deadline's a week from today, February 8th. Mm-hmm. And then if it's not now, it would be the summer. Like, if you want to go somewhere, we'll accommodate you wherever you want to go. We owe you that.
Oh, without question, they owe him that. My guess is, I doubt that happens. My figure, he stays in Golden State, and they try to figure out, okay, how can we retool around you? I don't know how they do that without giving up any of the young talent. But and I wouldn't, because then you're going
to
be
unless Draymond really turns a corner and they decide to move him, and Wiggins plays like he did against the Sixers,
right,
4 nights in 5 instead of 1 night in 9.
Yep. Yep.
Then maybe and someone's willing to take that big contract. Probably not. So Clay is done. Mm-hmm. They could re-sign him to a much lower deal if they want to. There's no guarantee they will. Mm-hmm. They may feel like they owe Clay. That's a problem. Looney, I could see getting traded tomorrow. Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. Just because you can shake that up, and he's not overpaid. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I could see some shakeup there, but I don't think, like you said, you said it right. I think it'll be more of the offseason where we might see something really happen.
For sure. All right, guys, we'll be back after a brief commercial break. All right, David, something that's gotten a lot of chatter around the league, and we talked about it a little bit as well, but not so in-depthly, is the NBA's minimum games rule that players have to play in order to be eligible for the postseason award. So MVP, Rookie of the Year, DPOY, all those six-man, blah, blah, blah. And the all-NBA teams, which include all defense, all rookie, et cetera. 65 games is the minimum. And at the time when the rule came out, I think Henry was on the show then, maybe not, but he either said it to us via message. We all thought, well, this is just silly, right? And it's the NBA, you know, telling on itself, right? Like, you realize that you have too many games on your schedule, so you set this sort of artificial number of 65, and we're already having complications around that because two of the league's premier players are already up against the wall, so to speak, with only a few games they could miss the rest of the year, and we have quite a number of games to go still.
Is that Embiid and Halliburton?
And Halliburton, correct. And this matters particularly for Halliburton because he's in the last year of his rookie deal. Next year, his extension kicks in 5 years with the base of 201, I want to say. But if he were to make an all-NBA team this year, which if all things being equal, he should.
Absolutely could.
That's an extra $40 million now that he will not get if he doesn't meet the 65-game threshold. And there's a chance that he won't, right? I think he can only miss 3 more games the rest of the year, which I don't have a crystal ball. That doesn't sound like a whole lot of games. 3, right, to miss. And Embiid, right now, we both have said, is playing like the undisputed MVP of the league. Well, if he doesn't play 65, he will not be back-to-back MVP. And so a lot of stuff's been coming out about it. And Halliburton was talking to The Athletic, and he said, I think it's a stupid rule. Like plenty of the guys in the league do, but this is what the owners want. So as players, we got to do our job and play in 65 games if we're able to. So that's what I got to do. Take care of my body to be able to play in those games. And I think you're seeing other players in the league kind of face the same thing as long as the owners are happy. And I thought that was interesting, him saying that. I'm like, look at you, young man. Like, you're not even like an established vet. And you're already like, well, as long as the owners are happy. And I was like,
guys are grown-ups, man.
I was like, good for you. I was like, good for you.
Know how to play the game.
Yeah, I was like, good for you. Look. The league has been disingenuous about this whole thing. And I think Henry talked about it. It was very easy to lump load management and blame the players for this. And it fits a narrative, right? Ha, those casual fans or those people who don't care about the NBA can say, I knew all along, these guys are lazy and don't want to play. And you especially, you know, that is nothing.
It's offensive.
It's offensive. Exactly. Offensive. You talk to these guys all the time. If they wake up one day and say, yeah, I want to sit out for 5 games because I just feel like it. Like, that's not how this works, people. They don't want to do that. Okay. Teams are often telling them, look, man, based on what our data is saying, we don't think you should play right now. You know, you're at the risk of this happening, that happening. And they understand that and they want to protect their bodies, but they're also competitors. And David, is a rhythm aspect to this too. And a lot of guys will talk about that. They don't like their rhythm getting broken. A lot of these guys are used to NBA is every other night. And that's how they're used to playing. They skip 2-3 days. They're like, now my shot feels weird. I feel weird. Like, they want to be out there hooping. And so it's a delicate balance. And again, the league cares about its money, broadcast deal, its television partners, the fans. And I think pointing is out at the players is just so disingenuous. And we can definitely talk about that ludicrous science report that the NBA came out with and said, according to our report, load management does not, unlike, and again, I want to be very clear about this quote unquote report. I'm using air quotes for those of you that can't see. This was not a public press conference where all NBA media were invited. Let's put it this way. True Hoop was not at that press conference, because if we were, I mean, I am sure multiple questions would have been asked. Can we talk more about that report? Who actually ran it? What was the science behind it? Like, none of that was made available. Everybody who was there just pumped out the league's press release. Yay, load management doesn't lead to less injuries, which we all know. Come on. That's not how science works. Because that, by the way, David, if that were true, what a scientific breakthrough that would be, right? You don't need rest. You can play a ton and you don't get injured. Wow. I mean, that would lead Scientific America if that was actually true. But we know it's not.
I mean, it's ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. I almost don't know where to begin. You started off with the rule. Mm-hmm. And I saw someone, I don't really tweet anymore, but I do get on it sometimes. I think it was Twitter, might have been Threads, about the vote. It was some voter who wrote, we factor that in. Mm-hmm. When we're looking at all them, we don't need that arbitrary number. Mm-hmm. We already, if someone plays 66 games, some plays, you know, 28, mm-hmm. 42, right. 50, we factor all that mm-hmm. in. And we have metrics, by the way. The earned wins is that cumulative number mm-hmm. over the course of a season. At least I think it is. I said this to someone the other day. Maybe it was you guys too. First thing I always say to a player not after a game, but the next day. Sometimes after a game, but always the next day. How you feeling? First question. Normally, I'm talking physically. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll say, "Feel great." Not commonly. Mm-hmm. If there's something, and I want to know what's going on. It's part of what I tell them. I have to love you like you're my child, even though you're not. Mm-hmm. I have to go through the motions in a way, because I have to know these kinds of things. It helps. And then we report to mm-hmm. the agent or the team or the physio mm-hmm. or whatever. These guys are beat up. They're beat up. They're dying to play. Tyrese put it beautifully. I saw him interview yesterday. He was pulled from the Celtics game.
Yes, when he got hurt.
They were getting beat up. They ended up coming back and taking the lead without him in an amazing, really fantastic game at 22 minutes. And he said, I think either after the game, I think it was after the game, but I saw it yesterday. Sometimes you have to have these minutes restrictions to save the player from themselves. I mean, I don't take my word for it. And I don't mean to say this and sound any differently than what it is, but I do talk to players every day. If you looked at my phone, I'm not a journalist. I'm in the media, but I'm not a journalist. I serve a different role. I get their truth and I don't ever talk about it. You know that. Mm-hmm. These guys, man, they always want to play. And your point on rhythm is exactly right. You just left out the most important thing, which is dribbling.
Oh, yeah.
Depending on their injury, mm-hmm. if they're hurt, like if you have a bad back, you can't practice dribbling. If you have a broken left thumb, you can dribble right hand all you want. You can do all sorts of running and movement. If your legs are hurt, as my son did when he broke his ankle, he sat on a chair, and I know because I had to chase the balls down when he lost them. Handle, 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 handle. But when it's a back issue, you're shut down. And so if you can't do that, then you can't also shoot typically, and the game just feels awkward. Your handle feels awkward. You'll know what I'm talking about. When you see a player who's a good player and a good dribbler, who dribbles it right out of bounds, mm-hmm. kicks it off his foot, or literally crosses over and the ball goes way over there, mm-hmm. that's the guy that probably was hurt for the last 3 or 4 days and didn't get his reps. Mm-hmm. You'll see a player at a dead ball try to go get a feel for mm-hmm. the ball, dribble it a few times, if he hasn't gotten many shots during the period of time that he's been in for whatever reason. Like, all that stuff matters. These guys, they live for the game. They love to sneak in, not even sneak. They love to go get shots up at night. Yep. This is what they do. I talked to an overtime elite player last year. I don't remember what it was. It must have been this year or last year. And when he was in Atlanta playing the Hawks, which is where overtime elite is, after the game, he went and hung out with a bunch of his old guys from overtime elite. Mm-hmm. And then they went to Village Inn or IHOP. Mm-hmm. IHOP, I think it mm-hmm. was. Maybe Waffle House for dinner. And these guys have some money. And then they went to go shoot mm-hmm. overtime elite. Yeah. Like, these guys, all we want to do is play. We have to be the adults, mm-hmm. right? When our children aren't feeling well, but they don't want to miss anything or they want to have that ice cream, mm-hmm. and we know it's going to be bad for their stomach, we have to speak up because they would definitely do the wrong thing. That's how good players are in many respects. They're bred to feel like they're tougher than anything. And so it's a scary thought and ironic that the league, it wants these guys to play through pain and injury in order to meet some arbitrary standard, when by definition, they're putting themselves at risk to miss even more games, which costs even more money to for the advertising dollars that they want. And the last thing I'll say is, think about a pitcher on 3 days rest versus 5 days rest or one, right? It's the same thing. The NBA tracks this. 1 day rest, you know, back to back, 1 day off, 2 day off. Like, they just feel so much better. And to act as if that none of that matters for injury is you're just lying to us. And that's what I think we all are upset about. Mm-hmm. Is it's not just one lie, it's a conspiracy. Yep. Because there's many people lying and they know each other are lying mm-hmm. when they say to us that resting doesn't prevent injury. Right. It's absurd to think that that's the case.
No, I'm with you 100%. And, you know, you talk about this all the time. Who is protecting our players, right? That's what matters here, right? They are the reason why all these billions of dollars exist. They don't exist because of referees and they don't exist because of owners. Like, the talent. They are the talent and the product. Their amazing ability to do these things. That's why they generate so many dollars. And, you know, the more and more, and this is not just in the NBA, this is every major professional league. I mean, European football is the same way right now. They're just adding more tournaments and more games. Like, you got Premier League teams and La Liga teams playing 3 matches, 4 matches in 7 days. That's absurd. Like, these people are going to break down. But, you know, billionaire owners are like, okay, one goes down, who cares? Next cog up in the wheel. That's how this system goes. And it's really a shame.
I think you and I both will agree that racism is a big part of why some Americans don't like our NBA players.
For sure.
We don't have to go into that. Mm-hmm. There's also an ignorance factor. My wife is, she's a teacher assistant. She's lower than a sub-teacher by choice at the poorest school, and certainly in North Pinellas County where we live. Most of her students, 100% free lunches, free breakfast, the whole thing.
They still have those, David, since most politicians are trying to get rid of free lunch and free breakfast.
Don't even get me started on that. It's so sickening and disgusting and sadistic. So she, this week, her teacher, who just lost the teacher of the year, she's amazing for the county. She's an incredible lady, but she's sick. And my wife has had a sub. And these are kids who get nothing from home. Typically, there are exceptions. And of course, those exceptions are doing great. Because the mom and dad are home, or just mom or dad or grandma, and they're on it. But most of these parents are working at night, and these kids don't get much. It's really very sad. And they don't make the progress that they would make otherwise if they had, you know, homes that did more, parents who did more. That's the irony of the idea of empowering parents. And we have all sorts of problems with that to begin with, because parents aren't doing enough. But my wife told me this morning, and you'll hear my point on this, she doesn't think they'll even have a sub tonight. So it's going to be her and her kids. And she loves these kids. Mm-hmm. She knows them very well. She brings them stuff all the time. As I've told you, I've seen lots of boxes of granola bars. I've never seen them open in her house. I know where they're going, thankfully. But you know what? She had to get up at 5:30 every morning. She does her 2-mile walk with our dog. She goes into work, whatever. It's not nearly as hard as having to play as hard as you can against the world's best players in a 48-minute game. When it's your third game in 5 days, where you can't just relax or you get embarrassed. My wife, she's not going to put on a video, but there's things she can do if she's tired. She can put the kids on a computer. There's fun. They could sing songs. Mm-hmm. That isn't the option as in professional sports. Right. Not in baseball, football, basketball, hockey, right. None of it. And so the overwhelming majority of people in their workplace, including you and me, mm-hmm. don't have that same challenge. Right. Of being physically taxed to the nth degree. We just don't. Even if you're doing manual labor, we don't have slavery anymore in this country, although some people may be upset about that. You can't make someone work to a certain speed or fire them on the spot in most cases. For these guys, if they're not going to be cut necessarily, but they don't want to be embarrassed. They don't want to lose their rotation. All these things matter. They are pushing themselves to a level and a limit that we really can't imagine, in my opinion.
The closest I would say comes to that are Amazon factory workers. As those of you who do any detailed work on what goes on at Amazon, their inability to go to the bathroom and take breaks and like, oh yeah, it's
really,
oh, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
I didn't know that.
I mean, listen, it's capitalism, right? I mean, ultimately what we're talking about here is everybody is a cog in the capitalist system right now. You can be one of the higher end cogs, right? Get paid a lot,
yeah,
or one of the lower end cogs, because, but everyone works within this cog, right? And if you don't work, you don't get paid, right? That's just simply how it works. And, you know, certain people exploit that to the nth degree. And, you know, in a way, that's kind of what we're seeing here with the NBA.
Yeah.
But, you know, time will tell. And, you know, this was just, I thought it was worth bringing up. We'll see what happens with Halliburton and Embiid and some other players, the rest, because they're not the only ones. Those are just the two that come to mind immediately.
I mean, they can miss 17 games. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you miss 2 weeks, you're missing 8 to 10 games.
Exactly.
And 2 weeks is a turn ankle.
Exactly. So, yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, Julius Randle, the separated shoulder. I mean, right?
How long is he out for?
I mean, they haven't said, but a separated shoulder at a minimum has been 4 weeks that I've seen recently. That's
really?
A month.
Really? So no one's
right for him. I mean, you're right. That's it. So this is the reality, man. All right, David, there was an article out in a couple of places, actually. I think The Athletic put one out, then ESPN put one out about the offensive explosion that we're seeing in the NBA.
Yeah.
And I think what happens a lot of times is people see these absurd single individual point scoring games and go, oh, my God. But I'm like, every year we see that at least, you know, once, twice, maybe three times. We have a couple barrages of like high scoring games, and then someone looked in the data and saw offense is scoring more points. But I think, you know, you have much more of an insight than, all right, yes, I see the average points per game is high, but there's more to it than just that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to give you a crystal view of something in a second. Let's get the obvious part out first. The court is more open than ever. Our pace is amazing. And so when you have that kind of vertical spacing because of the racing, you have just more room. It's not just horizontal spacing, it's vertical spacing too. So you have less obstacles in your way to shoot and score and drive and all that. Our skill game is incredible. We have fours and fives bringing the ball up all the time. Mm-hmm. Jokic mm-hmm. and whatever. Embiid's unbelievable. Embiid's the best shooter in the league.
It's crazy.
Inside three. Mm-hmm. But I think he's over 40% from three. Mm-hmm. I'm almost positive he is. So we've never seen anything like this before, which just stretches the defense out even more also. But what's really happening in a lot of these games, not a lot, I'm guessing in a lot because I can't watch all of them, and Hollinger wrote about part of it, and I think he missed something. He said free throw rate isn't up, but that's not the factor. The reality is you can't put your hands on a player mm-hmm. anymore, right? I've always said hand checking was overrated. It is. But touching, it used to be you could put your hands on a guy and that could call for a foul. It doesn't mean you had any impact. At least weren't being called for a foul, but now you're being called for a foul. I call it getting narrow. Mm-hmm. So a guy's coming at you, you get narrow. They as soon as you put a hand on them, they tend to blow that whistle. So I have to teach hands wide, or hands tall at the end. Hands off, hands off, hands off. You saw my phone? Mm-hmm. Lots of hands offs all the time, exclamation points and everything. And so what happens is playing time is the lifeblood of a team. It's the oxygen of a team for a player. You have to play. And so if you get a foul the first couple of minutes of the game and you want to get playing time, well, you're not going to touch this guy again. So here's an example I'll give you. Booker 62 against Indiana. Mm-hmm. Okay. I watched him play Indiana. Oh, just 4 or 5 days before that. Andrew Nembhard guarded him a good amount, not only, although his knee Smith, whatever. Booker went 9 of 24, and it was 2 6'5" sledgehammers going at each other. Pounding and pounding and pounding, and everything was fine. Other people played good for Phoenix. Booker didn't play so well. So now this game, he goes right at people right away. One of the first plays of the game, this is maybe 9 minutes left first quarter. Booker goes to the rim. Nembhard and another Pacers player tall up, go vertical. I'm not sure they even touched him. If they did, it was strictly vertical. It should have been no call. They call a foul on Nembhard. Mm. Should be no big deal. But here's the thing. You're a second-year player.
Yeah.
Tyrese is out.
Yep.
I've been injured a lot. Yep. I think he had missed 14 games already with injury.
I want to keep playing.
Right. And so now what? He just knows. He knows Booker is going to start sledgehammering him because he just played him 5 days earlier. So now it's hands off all the time. Well, I'm telling you, that happens all the time, right? I give Jaren Jackson Jr. credit in the sense that he doesn't worry so much about fouls.
Clearly not.
But it's a problem for him too. He got, in fact, he was in foul trouble recently in a game that I saw. He's incredible, by the way. Oh, he's on the list, by the way, yeah, of guys whose offense almost matches their defense.
Correct.
He's really coming as an offensive player. Yeah, without a lot of help around him right now. He's on that list. And so I think it's the way we're calling the touch fouls with our hand, not to mention just run a guy over and they call a foul on the defense almost always also. It's not as been as egregious as it was during the season. It's still bad. But definitely the hands thing is absolutely there. I'm watching it all the time with all the players that I talk to and work with, whatever. And that's a big reason why you're seeing these players jet up, because everyone's afraid to guard them. So as soon as you stop calling those fouls, you will see less of these performances, in my opinion.
I think you're right. And Vinny Goodwill of Yahoo Sports, senior national NBA writer, he had Joe Dumars. He interviewed him recently, and they talked about this. You know, is this something the league is concerned about? And, you know, the scoring's up, and, you know, and Joe kind of, in, you know, very NBA speak, was like, well, we don't sit around in the office going, oh, scoring's too high, we got to bring it down, or it's too low, we got to bring it up. It just, we kind of just see how things are going, and we let it flow. We do know the freedom of movement was something that was emphasized, right?
They've emphasized that for years, though. This is another level of whistle.
There really is. And I wonder now, so happens often, David, is we have unintended consequences, right, because of something, i.e. freedom of movement. But it's freedom of movement coupled with, to your point, all five players on the floor are skilled now. That never used to be the case, right? In the 80s and 90s, 2 out of 5 were skilled, maybe 3, right? Like, so you had less space. But now, with all the space you're talking about, both vertically and horizontally, this freedom of movement may not be such a great idea. Because now it's, I can't guard. And I have to be able to guard these guys credibly. I don't want 80s wrestling and head. None of that. But there has to be a way to play defense credibly without, every time I breathe on a star, foul.
So again, to boil it down, so you're attacking me and you surge forward and maybe catch me off guard. The instinct is to grab. Okay, so I'm not going to grab you if I'm an NBA player. I know how to do it. I'm going to subtly try to occupy you. You can't see my hand, but it's at your hip.
Below.
At your chest. I'm just trying to get hold a little bit.
And guide you
so
a little bit.
I can maybe catch up with my feet. Just a little bit. Yeah. And they're calling that a foul. So now I have a foul. I don't want to get a second foul, or I have 2. I don't want to get a third foul. They call a lot of crazy illegal screens. That's always a problem. I always tell players, assume 3 bad calls are coming. So you can't commit 3 good fouls, meaning fouls that are definitely real. You're screwed. Okay. And so I now am afraid to even get near the guy. I just have to let him go. And I do tell players all the time, if you can't give yourself a really good chance to make a play on the ball, you have to let them score. Your minutes are more valuable to you and to your team. You have to let those 2 points are less important than the minutes you'll play overall, that you won't be playing if you're in foul trouble, or you won't be able to compete at the highest level that you need, the level you need to, because you're afraid to get another foul.
Right.
So there's an easy way to clean this up. Stop calling the touch fouls. Just stop doing it. A strong forearm shiver, fine. A strong push, fine. An arm to the face, foul. All those are fouls. But the little bit, this is part of the game. This is where I get upset. Is I don't want the 90s bloodbaths. Not even close. Right. I don't want wrestling that way. I used to always say basketball is a ballet and a fight at the same time. And it's gotten much more into the ballet part and much away, far away from the fight. We need to get a little more fight in, a little more competitive spirit in, which the postseason supposedly will bring. Let's start doing it now so we can see what it looks like.
Yeah.
But we didn't need to fix it like this. We have to allow some contact. Yeah. And it also inspires the players to work on their bodies more, work on their game more. You got to play through contact more. Now it's been rewarded for 2 free throws every time.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I'd be so curious this postseason. I'll be watching this closely. How are refs calling this in the postseason? Is it the same as the regular season? Or do they let stuff go and let people be more physical? That'll be interesting. Another point I thought about, David, because we know that they don't practice in the NBA, because how can you when you play a game every other night? You mentioned illegal screens. How much of that do you think is just the synergy of the ball handler and screener not working together enough to know, shit, stop, whatever his angle is coming, because we don't practice enough. We don't practice at all.
I think it's just a lack of knowledge from the player, the big guy especially. We used to always blame the guard. Mike D'Antoni finally brilliantly taught us, no, it's the big man's fault pretty much all the time. Stop moving. Just stop. Right? So what I teach our players to frame the screen like a catcher does in pitching. I don't know if I ever told you this before. So you know how a catcher gets a little outside the strike zone and kind of, right, sometimes pisses the umpires off. So what I teach my guys is whether you screened illegally or not, stop and then hold your screen a beat longer. Because when you screen and move, even if you weren't setting the screen illegally, that quick move and afterwards tends to catch the referee's attention. So screen and stop for a beat. I also allow sometimes the play to develop. Now, if you don't want to screen, then go sit early, slip it early. But if you're going to set a screen, stop and hold it for at least a beat. Let them get away from you. Let the defender get off of you. Then you can freely move as long as you don't roll into the guard, whatever. It pretty much works every time. Okay. Just stop and you'll be okay. And hold it for a little bit longer. So it's mostly, to me, young guys being excited, because most veterans aren't getting called with many unless they're just not mindful of it. And they need to be made mindful. And I tell you, this is where coaching comes in. Coaches who really help their players understand what they should value most are much better off than the coaches who don't. And you have to nip those guys in the bud. You can't let them keep setting screens illegally. And just taking them out isn't always the answer. Teach them it. That's what I try to do, is teach them.
No, I love it. David, I saw an interesting article today from Jake Fisher of Yahoo Sports. And it was about Tony Snell, a 9-year NBA veteran who was in the G
League. Yeah, Maine Celtics.
He's in the G League
now. I watched him play.
And it was a really, I thought, a touching article, just an important one, because oftentimes in the NBA, media will say this all the time. In a trade, you know, the big principals get named, obviously, because that's what people care about, the picks. But then there's always what people refer to as salary filler, right? Well, that salary filler is a person, usually, right? In order for the salaries to have to match. It isn't like money just comes out of thin air. It's somebody else whose salary numbers match and meet whatever the number is, so that the equal money going in both directions. And Tony Snell was part of the trade that brought T.J. McCollum to the New Orleans Pelicans. Remember. And he'd ended up on the Blazers, and Snell's a 39% career 3-point shooter, long, athletic guy. Played in Milwaukee.
Was athletic.
Yeah, I mean, he's 30 years old now,
but he's still really long.
Yeah, and can still shoot. From what I understand. Anyway, he needs to be on a roster, David, by tomorrow at whatever the time the day of the time of the day deadline is, noon or 5 p.m. in order for him to hit 10 years. In the NBA. Why does that matter? Well, when you hit 10 years, you're now eligible for a different level of benefits within the NBPA's player benefit pool. And why that matters is because Tony Snell has two sons that suffer with autism. And if anybody knows anything about children or anyone who suffers from any kind of condition, those things are expensive because you're seeing specialists and there's a variety of things you have to do outside of the norms of regular wellness checks. And because our country is so fucked up with how we do insurance, that costs a lot of money, even for an NBA player. It's just expensive to do these kinds of things. And this higher level of insurance that he would be eligible if he's a 10-year vet would allow him to take care of his family and his kids and have them have that coverage, which, I mean, if anybody's had any kind of medical issues or pays for medical insurance themselves, you know how expensive that stuff is. It's astronomical. And I thought, wow, it's like these trades happen, and people don't think of these players as anything more than just people that just show up on the floor and just do this thing that you like to watch. But they have lives and they have families that depend on them. And this little small thing that doesn't seem like a big deal to anybody, huge if he gets that benefit. And here's hoping that someone picks
I watched him last night. The Maine Celtics played the 905 team from Toronto. Blew him out. Yeah, blew him out. Toronto, that's bad. Maine Celtics are okay. They've got some talent. I wondered why Tony was still playing the G League. It made no sense to me. He's not a young guy. Now I have the answer. And I would tell you, a longtime player of mine told me twice recently that he played more than 10 years. Their health insurance is incredible. Like crazy. I won't go into the details because I'll butcher it anyway. Good.
Elite.
Crazy incredible. Yeah, with like extra money to spend on this, that, whatever. It's amazing. This player goes to Vegas every year in the summertime because they do a free health screen, full health screen. This guy is, he's got to be 40 now. I guess he's right on 40-something. Married with kids. He goes to Vegas every year, flies in, does all the screening, flies out, be back with his family. He's done the Vegas thing enough as a younger man, but how do you beat the free health screening for everything? And he was telling me when the whole FBI sting of these guys who were basically, I didn't know what
stealing
happened.
Stealing from their fellow players.
what they were doing was claiming that they were going to see certain doctors because you get money back beyond all the other incredible insurance you get. You get money back, but the doctors were in on it, or whoever was writing these scripts, whatever. And yeah, they were stealing. And this player was telling me he's so upset. He's like, because now they're making it even tougher on me. He, first of all, this guy made a lot of money. I appreciate but it's almost like people look at me like I'm trying to be a thief because these other people were so wrong. I'm so glad the NBA, I wish they would value our players while they're playing.
I agree.
Much as they value them after they're playing. At least we got 50% right. Yeah, I never thought about it with Tony. Now I wonder why Elfrid Payton was in the G League. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, and look, you know, people say, oh, what, you know, again, you guys, Tony's made $52 million over his career, which I know to almost everyone listening, that sounds like an extraordinary sum of money because it is.
Rich people stay rich by not spending every dime they have.
Correct. I was like, $52 million. I was like, let's assume half of that's gone to taxes, agents. You know, think about it. Like, it isn't like Tony's going to go now work somewhere else and do something else for a living, right? Like, it's a very different kind of life, right? So your earning window is very small. So you've got to maximize it when you're a pro athlete. So again, I hope that works out from David. Did you know this? And I didn't know. Tony was diagnosed also with being on the autism spectrum. Because he saw the article, and Jake did a really good job with this, talked about, you know, he would notice certain behaviors from his kids when they were young. And at first, he didn't think anything of it because, like, oh, that was just like how I was, you know? And it's like,
interesting. Wow.
Well, yes, because, you know, that's, yeah. It's just, anyway, glad that that was solved, at least in terms of what the issue was. A nanny helped him figure out, like, I think you might want to get this checked out. And he said, okay, we will. And so, again, rooting for the Snells. Hope that Tony gets on a roster and he can get that insurance because that is so, so needed. David, the NBA draft. See, look, this is when I don't like the NBA when they try to do things like the NFL. So now the NBA draft is going to 2 days. Round one on one day, round two on a second day. And I mean, you know how you and I feel about the draft. We think it's stupid, but here we are.
I know why they're doing it, though, I think. I think it's because the additional two ways mean more of these guys are going to at least get a chance. And so I think their heart's in the right place, separate from the entertainment part of it. They want to just do a better job in round two because those guys are going to – they're not shipping them to Europe right away necessarily or giving them a roster spot. They'll get a two-way, not a roster spot. There's three two-ways. And so those second-round picks are more valuable than ever. And – I watched a game last night. Don Barlow from the Spurs played as a two-way. Gigi Jackson's a two-way guy, am I right, for the Grizzlies. I saw another two-way player play the other day. I'll think of it in a minute. Like, they're getting – and they're good. Like, they're getting playing time. So I have a feeling that's why they're doing it. It's just – it's going to add to the craziness. It's already crazy. Because if you don't go first round, you're going to – you're probably going to help a little bit because agents are going to be able to cut deals with teams with their two-way guy if they don't get drafted also.
Yep.
Yeah, because you're not going to have three – you're not going to have three picks in the second round typically. Right. And you might have one holdover from a two-way from the year before maybe. Yeah. I don't love any of it. I don't think anyone's going to watch it in the second round. I really don't. It's not going to be well-watched.
Do people watch the first round of the draft much? I'd love to see what the ratings are for that. I let's put it this way.
What about day two and three of the NFL? I doubt it's this.
I bet it's – yeah, no, but I bet it's more than – I would posit.
Oh, for sure.
Day two or day three of the NFL is higher than day one of the NBA. I would posit.
Well, but that's because day two and day three draftees in the NFL are likely to play on the team more. These guys are going to be two-way guys almost always. Not always, but almost always. Certainly after 35, 36, 37, almost for sure they'll be two-ways going forward. So, yeah, you're not going to – the teams – the fandom won't be as interested.
Definitely not. All right, David, top five time. You can't give us a little hint that you're doing something different here with top five. So what's going on? What's different in top five?
So I decided to look at, okay, what do teams look like in January? We're done now. And then I wanted to go back a little further. So I looked at two things. I'm going to read off my list of guys. So this was the top five net margin in January. Number five, OKC. Number four, Boston. Number three, Clippers. Number two, Cavs, and then we've got the Knicks, number one in January. But I went back to December 15 and looked at record. Same five teams since December 15 for record. So my number five team, because they're tied anyway, fifth best record since December 15, The Oklahoma City Thunder.
Ooh. Is it the first time
they're my number
the Thunder five. Broke in for you? Is that the first time they broke in top five for you? I don't, maybe not. The
no, they've been there okay. before. No, they've been there before.
First of all, before I
they're about 18-7, by the way, 25 games.
We like what the,
that's a lot, by
we
the way.
Like what the Thunder are doing. Before I get to my five line, shout out to the Phoenix Suns, winners of 8 of the last 10. I think good things are happening there. We talked about it already. We know all the things that we worry about beyond their top five. But that top five, pretty good. Okay, my five line. The Denver Nuggets and Cleveland Cavaliers. I got them tied at five.
Okay. Nicely done. My number four are the 18-7 Knicks.
My number four are the
You see, same record.
My number four is the Oklahoma City Thunder.
So we're right there. Mm-hmm. Number three, clearly the best team in the league. And I just saw them play a couple times recently. Very impressive team. But they're 19-8. Since December 15, Boston Celtics.
Interesting.
Third for me this
My season. Number three, yeah. You just mentioned them, and they are in my city right now, the New York Knicks.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. Number two for me is the Clippers, 17-5. 17-5 since 12-15. So they're my number two.
Also my number two. I love what this team, and they're deep. It's not just those three dudes. They got other players too. Again, if that team is healthy, buzzsaw.
Yeah. And then I've got there's one team at 16-4. It's only 20 games. OKC played 25. Knicks played 25. I think the Celts are 19-6, so they played 25. This team is 16-4. Your Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, I was just gonna say the Cavaliers. Yep. They have been.
Yep.
Now look, offensively, not great, but defensively, oh my goodness,
16th in offense, yeah. Maybe
second in defense.
But they're missing Garland and Mobley for a while. Correct. Mobley's back now. Yeah.
Number one, I kept the Celtics
and
there.
Your number one is Boston.
Yeah. Look, we got some great.
So Philly didn't make your list.
So Philly's been struggling, as you know, David.
And Embiid.
And now this is a problem for them. I mean, listen, he misses any extent. And by extended, I mean like five games or more. They got problems. Yeah. Big problems. So
I think so.
We'll monitor that and see what's going on there. All right, everybody. Enjoy the basketball this weekend, and we will see you on Monday. Take care.